Wednesday mornings at this time, we do focus on local foods. And we've talked about vegetables and breads and livestock and beer. And today, we're talking about coffee. Julie and Mike French own and operate Stonehouse Coffee in Nisswa, Minnesota. And Mike is going to tell us more about the history of their passion and some of the secrets to a great cup of coffee. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
You guys, both of you used to have different professions in the medical field, and now you're serving what I think is one of the most coveted medications in the world, coffee. How does one go from tending to patients to tending to coffee beans?
Well, you know, that's interesting. My wife got us into this. She always wanted to have a coffee ice cream shop, and she was working part-time, and so she bought this business. Not to get into too long a story, it just kind of evolved after that. We've all been, you know, all of us have been drinking coffee a long time. And as I had a friend that started Coco Moon, another that started the coffee shop in Longville, both friends of mine. And I kind of liked what they were doing, too, and so did Julie. But we thought there was another level to it. And that's how we got into the roasting part of it. After we'd been in it a couple of years, actually during the second year, we realized that wholesale coffee had some drawbacks as far as varieties, roast levels, taste, and especially staling and getting old quick, because coffee is an extraordinarily perishable food product, and it oxidizes, hydrolyzes rather quickly, and changes its flavor profile. And we noticed this and said, you know, we can do this better. And Julie took me out to Coffee Fest in St. Cloud, and I've always been a machine guy, and I saw those roast, or Coffee Fest in Washington, pardon me, and I kind of fell in love with those roasters, and she says, you know what? We need to get one of those. So, and that was about 16 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, and you travel around, you travel the distances looking for coffee beans, is that right?
Well, absolutely. We, you know, not right at first. We're like every other business. We had to make sure we were financially capable of continuing. And that's your first worry. And that subjected us to relying on others a lot. Since that time, we've been fortunate enough, and it's really opened up a whole new world to us, which is just an amazing world. We find we go into country, we cup with coffee producers, we've been to the farms, you know, all over Latin and South America. Recently, last year, we were actually in Kenya. And these experiences are just amazing, not only from a coffee standpoint, but from a cultural standpoint. You really get to see people of other cultures, other origins, other circumstances that are, and what we find is they're amazing. These people are loving, caring, wonderful people, a lot of them extraordinarily intelligent, smart, and capable. They're not all the poor farmer that doesn't know anything there at all, because they do. They're very highly motivated. What I especially take away from a lot of these journeys is the sense of family and community that they have. It's they can take care of each other, and it's really something, you know, I feel in America we could do a lot better job of. But I don't want to get political, but it certainly is something you would see out there that is, it just kind of gets your heartstrings, you know.
Yeah. So how do you get
a, interrupting here. How do you get a pound or 10 pounds or 100 pounds of coffee from Kenya back to Nisswa?
Well, it's not easy, and it's very difficult. And that's why we have importers, because they have all these export laws and import laws. But they're sent over on these big containers. And you've seen these drive down the road on backs of trucks. They're usually about 20 or 40 footers. They are loaded with coffee in country. They go to port, and then they're shipped. And we have what our major ports are in New Jersey, Miami, Houston, there's San Francisco, and Seattle. are most of our entry ports for the U.S., where all these ships come in and get downloaded. So what they do is they're shipped over. There's warehousing. They have to go through customs. There's warehousing. Then they're disseminated to importers all over the U.S. That's a standard way that that happens. What we're seeing now, and what we're very much a part of, is direct trade coffees. I know you've heard of fair trade. Direct trade is a way of really ensuring that the people get what you're paying for it, the coffees, because especially coffee roaster, we pay way above the commodity grade price for these coffees a pound. Direct trade, we really allow that coffee farmer to receive the benefit of our business selling that coffee. And it's a really unique direct relationship, because we just direct trade with only the people that have the most humanitarian concerns and deal with their pickers and farmers. And usually these are farmers groups, so they're forming the rules for their, instead of the standard way is they send their coffee to a mill. The mill is owned by somebody else. The mill pays them a small amount. It'd be like, and they actually control prices in country. Mm-hmm. Then the exporter decides what the price will be to the importer in our country. They're the ones that really benefit in the old standard way of doing things. Now with direct trade, the farmers actually receive the benefit.
So you go to these countries and you test different coffees flavor-wise?
Right. We actually go in and we'll cup different coffees from different farms, see what we like, see what we think will work in our demographic. And because everybody in the country drinks different styles of coffee. It's kind of like beer. And some people like a stout and some people like an IPA. If you see in the concentrated areas of the country that, like the population dense areas with a lot of millennial development, you see a lot of the very bright, light roasted, almost sour coffees are being sold. And the kids love those. As you get older, you develop you want a more balanced coffee that has a nice acidity, however, has a lot of flavor development. So that's what we look for. We're trying to match our customers' desires with the coffees that we're cupping out there in these countries.
So what is the roasting process like? When it comes to you, what actually comes to you, and then what do you do with it?
Oh, I get, we go through a lot of coffee here, and it comes in 154-pound bags if it comes from Central America. If it comes from Asia or Indonesia, they're 134-pound bags. Usually I like to get my coffees in what we call Grain Pro. So they're a jute, which is a natural reoccurring product and renewable. And then there's a Grain Pro bag in it that protects it from any contamination from anything around it. And coffee's real organoleptic, meaning it'll suck in flavors of any kind. So you have to really protect it in shipment from that. But so it comes in these bags. And then we do a lot of sample roasting here to vary up our roast profiles so that we can change the taste. So I can roast the same coffee to be nice, acidic, bright, and front-loaded with perhaps fruit, or take it in deeper into the roast so you get more of a balanced body development. So that's what we do. And we have two different roasters. We have one that's a little larger and then one that's a little smaller. And we play with these coffees trying to get a flavor profile that people will like. But I think the thing that people don't understand, coffee is very dynamic in how it can taste from one year to the next from the same area that it's growing. So we have a lot of variables in the coffee, and it really changes crop year to crop year, and even after it enters the country, it's constantly changing its flavor profile.
Oh, interesting. Oh, and I've also, well, and you were just mentioning that it is a perishable item. Its flavor goes bad after a while, and
It's amazing how short that time is. I personally will not drink a coffee that's over 8 days old out of the roaster. it has just changed so much. And I'd suggest, and not to be, the most of the coffee being sold in America is not fresh. The reality is if you sit there and you roast it and then you taste it or cup it formally over several days, you'll see the effect of oxidative rancidity set into the coffee. Until it becomes, after about 10 days, just a shadow of what it was when it was originally roasted.
Two different size roasters. How much coffee are you roasting in either of those at a given time?
Well, one is what we call 10 kilo, the other is a 23. So I never roast that much. I like a lot. That's maximum capacity, and you lose a lot of control over the roast profile if you start roasting to those levels. So I roast about 70% or 60% of capacity when we roast. So I can adjust the what we call the ramp rate or temperature ramp rate and the roast profile curve. I like to have complete control over all the reactions that are occurring in that coffee. Coffee goes through a couple different sets of, it's kind of interesting, bringing up the temperature. Coffee doesn't start roasting until after about 280 degrees. It has to drive off the moisture. We call that the drying phase. Then after that, it actually starts the Maillard reaction and starts browning and turning into the coffee, developing coffee flavors that we associate with coffee. As a coffee, green is incredibly unattractive beverage. It is. It's very acidic. It's got a lot of chlorogenic acid. This is where all the health benefit comes from. I think most people don't realize coffee is just full of antioxidants. And one certain vitamin B3, niacin, it's one of the greatest sources. And I think that's what we see. Anybody that drinks coffee seems to live longer than somebody who doesn't, that has the same set of bad habits.
You hear that, Dave?
So, yeah, absolutely.
We're talking local foods here with
Mike French.
French from the Stonehouse Coffee Company. And Mike is reminding us that coffee has food value, but food has no coffee value. So we need
it's good for us. How long does a roasting take?
Well, roasting is real interesting. There's when I first started, there was little information on it, and you can learn on your own. And that was all driven by what the flavors you got out of it. Big companies can, and they almost killed the coffee industry doing this, can roast coffee in 90 seconds. But what happens with that, you don't have any flavor development. What you're seeing with the drum roasting, we're seeing roast times usually 12 and a half to 16 and a half minutes for the darker roast. That's where we seem to find the best flavor profiles for our consumer. There are guys out here who do it shorter than that. But if you keep in the roaster too long, it bakes it. And it just takes all the life out of the coffee. So it's a rather quick process.
Are you adding flavors into it?
No, not. We're real purists. In the roastery, we don't allow any man-made flavors to actually enter our roastery. We don't want any contamination with that at all. We do add man-made flavors like your Highlander Grogs, your Jamaican Meat Crazies, your Southern Toasted Pecan, your Vermont Maple Nut Crunches. All those, that's done over in our shop. That's kept totally separate from us. We're very curious about the enzymatic and varietal distinction in our coffees.
We had a question from a listener, and she's wondering, how do I make a good pot of coffee with my Joe DiMaggio, Mr. Coffee Maker,
yeah,
or my KitchenAid? And one of the things I noticed on your website that I'm hoping you can weave into your answer is talk to us about hard water and soft water.
Oh, wow. Yeah, let me tell you the story. First time as our business evolved, I realized everybody up here was gravitating towards coffees that I didn't like. they were the darker roasts, and I'm going, well, they'd lost their varietal distinction. And then I realized we live in the Iron Range, and everybody had a softener. So they're using soft water to extract their coffee. They come in this this complaint. I can't get the flavor out of my coffee that you have here. And we realized it was because of the sodium bicarbonate in the water. And that just gets, even in beer, this does the same thing. It destroys the mashing process. So they weren't able to extract the flavors. But the dark roast, they extracted the partial solubles in the coffee, and they liked that taste. So we began playing with our water quality, and hardness is huge. Now, if you, especially Coffee Association, would tell you 5 grains hardness will give you your best flavor extraction and soluble extraction. However, we believe it's a little higher than that, actually. What we find is we get a whole different soluble extraction. We use like 8 to 9 grain hardness here in our store. That occurs naturally in our water. We have to take the iron out, but and then the carbon filter. But, oh, my God, the flavor profile is amazing. So to get back at the things that control the quality in your cup are, number one, your water quality. You really don't want soft water. You don't want RO, and you don't want distilled. You need to have some hardness in the water. And it's a calcium-based hardness that you're looking for. If you have that, then you can really explore these light to medium roasts because the flavor will just pop for you. Secondarily, one, you need a good coffee. That's given. But two, you need to have a brew system that allows for a significant amount of contact time with those grounds. If you're doing filter drip coffee, you need at least 4.5 to 5 minute contact time. Now, most brewers out there don't do that. You know, they're especially the off-the-shelf stuff that are sold in variety stores. They're not designed by coffee enthusiasts. They're designed by engineers who probably don't know much about it. So, like, I always, my favorite one to pick on is the bun, which would actually try to extract a cup of coffee in 90 seconds. And that's just too quick to get the solubles out of the coffee itself. So you really need that contact time.
Yeah.
What I would suggest, if you want to really find out what coffee is all about and you have access to quality water, you use something called immersion dripper. They're really cheap. And what they are it's like a Chemex, which is 1950s technology. This is just amazing, isn't it? Only they have a valve in it. So they're able to hold the hot water in contact with the grounds for that period of time. And then you just move this valve and you drain it right in your cup. And you'll find that you'll taste things you've never tasted before in coffee.
Fantastic.
Oh yeah. We're happy to demonstrate. We're happy to help people in any way they can to have a better coffee experience. That's what's kind of driven our business. And there's a lot of people like us out there doing a similar thing all across the U.S. Our whole thing is to ensure that you have the best experience with your coffee that you can. I mean, in a lot of countries, they have coffee rituals. I think we develop our own in our own way here in the U.S. I think you identified it, that you need your coffee in the morning, or you like your coffee in the morning. For a lot of people, that becomes a very special time. It's your first awareness, awakening of the morning. You want that really wonderful aromatic cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of that life experience thing. It becomes a little more important as as you get older, I think. And that's what we're here to help amplify and embellish and ensure.
Awesome.
For people.
And you guys are right there in the Nisswa kind of town square shopping center there.
Yeah, we're in the Nisswa Square. We've been here since 2001. We don't have any marketing money. We're small, so not a lot of people know about us unless they stop.
Yeah.
Or they've heard word of mouth. We also have a place in Baxter, in the Riverwood Bank building. We have a beautiful shop down there that's, like, amazing. That's right in front of Office Max and Target.
Great. So people can stop in and you can educate them on how to create the best cup of coffee.
Yeah, and we're going to be starting. Yeah, we're going to be starting in December. We're doing a not to use this airtime to advertise. We're going to be starting doing a Cups for Cause, where we're actually going to be taking 25 cents a cup for the local food set, our local soup kitchen, because they've been struggling so badly, and donating it to help those folks. So it's kind of a community thing we can do and feel committed to. My wife's always, Julie has been a big supporter of that charity and of several others.
It's your way to give back.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we'd like to get people involved in that. I think we've, as monies get tightened and stuff, we need to show our ways we can make it work. Kind of like those folks in Latin America and Kenya that make sure everybody's taken care of.
Yeah, you're bringing it around full circle.
Absolutely.
That is Mike French. He's a co-owner at the Stonehouse Coffee. They have a shop in Nisswa and in the Baxter area. Thank you so much, Mike, for taking the time to talk to us today and shed a little light on our morning ritual and remind me that maybe I should slow down a little bit and enjoy it just a little bit more.
Katie, thank you so much for calling.
Local Foods, part of the Wednesday morning show right here on KAXE, KBXE, Northern Community Radio.